You're listening to the Modern Web Podcast. For more podcasts, videos, and events, find us online at modern-web.org or follow us on Twitter at modern.web. That's modern.web.
Rich Harris, creator of Svelte, Tracy Lee, Adam Rackus, and Ben Lesh discuss the state of Svelte and how React server components are revolutionizing web development.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Modern Web. I'm so excited to be here today. My name's Tracy. You can follow me on Twitter at Lady Leet or on LinkedIn at Tracy S. Lee. I'm here with Adam Rackus, who you cannot find on LinkedIn. Well, you can, but, you know, he's not on there really, truly on there.
I got a message from like a week ago that I only now responded to, and I felt bad. But yeah,
find me on Twitter. Responded to somebody on LinkedIn?
It seemed legit. They claimed to be a classmate of mine from the Air Force Academy wanting info on Spotify. So I was like, yeah, I'll reply. Sorry, it's been a week since I
Hey, I mean, that's pretty good timing. I didn't know you'd like, I'm going to message you on LinkedIn today. That's what I'm going to do.
I'll reply in a week.
So you can follow Adam Rackus on Twitter at Adam Rackus. And then today we have Rich Harris, who we all know and love. Do we all love you, Rich?
Ooh, everyone love you. Controversial statement.
You can't not love someone with such a buttery smooth English accent as that.
You know what, I got a message from LinkedIn the other day congratulating me on 7 years at the New York Times, which tells you how much I use LinkedIn.
Oh my goodness. Well, you're also a cheese fan according to your profile, so do you have a favorite cheese?
The favorite cheese is whatever cheese is closest to hand. I am a very unfussy, non-discriminating cheese eater.
Okay, like, so all the fancy cheeses you also like?
Oh yeah, I like fancy cheeses, but I'll slum it with the I'll eat the cheese of the common man.
Yeah, what is the cheese of the common man? Because, you know, you're not, well, I mean, you're not from the U.S. but you're in the U.S. so like, is the cheese of the common man
cheddar? Maybe get through cheddar. A lot of cheddar.
Yeah. And is that in the is that like also in the UK, like cheddar?
Oh yeah, I mean the cheddar that we get is, I think we normally get like Irish cheddar.
Yeah. Okay.
So the Irish they know their cheese.
My favorite is like a mimolette. You know what mimolette is?
I don't think I'm familiar.
Yeah, it's kind of, it looks like a cantaloupe. So there's a rind and then it's orange and then there's like salt granules inside of it.
Oh.
So yeah, it's pretty delicious. Yeah, but there's also this one called epoisse. Have you heard of epoisse?
It's like, no, really liquid. Wow, I got to level up my cheese game apparently.
There, it's like really liquidy and it basically tastes like, you know, dirty socks, I suppose. But
you had me until that part.
Well, if you're a cheese lover, you know, you're going to love it. But
all right.
Anyways, we love your opinions about cheese, but we also love your opinions about, drum roll, what? React server components? Tell us about yourself, though, by the way. Like, we haven't even introduced you because we just assume everybody knows you.
God, I hate this part. I am the, perhaps most relevant to the current audience, I am the creator of a UI framework called Svelte, which is the thing like React or Vue. It allows you to write your applications out of declarative components. Been working on that for about 7 years. For the last two and a bit of those years, been doing it full time at Vercel, who employ three of us to work on Svelte. We have a application framework that goes with it called SvelteKit. Aside from that, what can I tell you? I live in New York. My background is in the news business. And I just kind of been doing open source as a way to keep myself amused for the last few years.
I love that. Well, again, we all know and love you. So, and yeah, it was actually Adam's idea to invite you on. So,
I mean, Adam only has good ideas, so.
It's true. You can just check his Twitter handle, and that was rubber stamped. Your Twitter handle was rubber stamped by Rich.
I think people were saying some negative things about RSC, and I said, we got to get Rich on here. He's got to get in on this, although I'm not sure that'll go over well with all your coworkers. So what have I done to you? I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're putting me in a tough spot here, because I do have opinions about RSEs. Not like bad opinions. I actually think they're pretty phenomenal. But I do work with the people who are building the preeminent RSC framework. So yeah, I'm going to try and be honest and forthright and share my deeply held views without pissing off the people that I hang around with in our Slack channel.
All okay. right. Dive in.
I mean, start me off somewhere. Ask me a question.
So if we were to say the top level, like design goal. So for a long, long time, if you're building a web app, JavaScript kind of matured and blew up. And we had all these frameworks that let you build reactive UIs, but they all lived on the client. And that was great. And it was good enough most of the time. But there's a lot of benefits of doing more things on the server so that you don't have all those extra round trips before you start requesting data. And so RSC was certainly not the first, but it was a big improvement in React itself to sort of bridge that gap and let you start moving more things to the server and stream them down to the client while keeping the same sort of component model. And I think that's a good starting point. And if you want to take it from there and talk about what the trade-offs are and what the difficulties are, and maybe that'll lead us to a good discussion of how you solve some of those problems differently in SvelteKit.
Yeah, I mean, there is really is so much to unpack there. For me, the big appeal of React Server Components is that it is the logical next step of this journey that we've been taking over the last decade or so to co-locate all of our stuff together, basically. You know, back in the day, we had this absurd notion that you should separate your concerns, which meant like having your HTML over here and your JavaScript over here and your CSS over there. And gradually, largely thanks to React, but it was a broad-based movement, people came to accept that that was a very, very bad idea indeed. And that actually, if you have some CSS that relates to a specific piece of markup in your application and you have some JavaScript that relates to that same markup, then it all belongs together. And so we started co-locating stuff. And I think Svelte was at least for a while, one of the more aggressive adherents of that philosophy, because not only do we have our behaviors alongside our markup, but we actually have styles right there inside the component file. So everything is like this nice little self-contained thing. But there was a piece missing from that, which is the data that your component needs to render. The assumption was that you were gonna have that data passed into the component, or maybe, you know, when the component initializes in the browser, it's gonna like send off a network request and fetch some data, and then it's gonna update some internal state. And that works, but there's obviously a bunch of drawbacks to that. And one of those drawbacks is like, you really don't want to be doing that stuff over the network if you can help it, because you're gonna have to have loading spinners and like you'll probably have all sorts of waterfalls and grubby stuff like that. But the real problem is that you need to have that data fetching code, if you're going to pass it into the component, in some other location than the component itself. And that is basically how frameworks work up until RSC, at least the client-side JavaScript-centric frameworks worked. Like Next, prior to the app router, had things like get server-side props. SvelteKit had a load function. Its predecessor had a thing called a preload function, which did the same sort of thing. Remix came along, they have a loader function. And these are all solving the data fetching problem at the root level. So you get your data at the root level and then you pass it down to your components as props. Works reasonably, but if you delete a component that is using some of that data, you might still be fetching it and not realize. Like you have no idea that you've deleted the code that needs the data, but not the data itself. And conversely, if you add a component deep in your tree somewhere, then you might need to update your data loading function, which is quite remote and might even be overseen by a different team. And you just have this really nasty coordination problem. And one of the things, not the only thing, but one of the things that React Server Components solves really elegantly is the code for getting the data that belongs with the component exists in the component itself. So that is just like the logical conclusion of this trajectory that we've been on of just getting all of the stuff together. Because then guess what? If you no longer need that component, you can delete it and you're no longer going to fetch the data for that component. So that is a really nice, elegant thing that I don't think I've seen anyone solve as well as RSCs have solved.
Sounds too good to be true. What's the catch?
So I think the biggest catch with RSCs in my view is that you're essentially creating these two separate worlds. Like you have components on the server and you have components on the client, but they're not the same kind of thing. And there's obviously good reasons for that. Like the server is this stateless environment, so it doesn't make sense to have stateful hooks. Your client components, it doesn't make sense that they should be able to access the database directly. So stuff like that. Like there's obvious reasons for the behavioral differences between server components and client components. But I think what we've kind of seen is that difference is just really confusing for people. Like I've seen people really struggle with the concept of components that work this way. Like people just, I don't know, don't fully understand how they work. And I get it. I sympathize with that. Like I want to just have the same mental model throughout my application to the extent possible. I don't want to be thinking like, oh, what are the rules again on how I can combine these different components and like what data can be serialized, all of that stuff. It just confuses me and it confuses a lot of people. And so I think like that is the main sticking point is that it's difficult.
This is one of those places where being old is a huge advantage, because there's been so many times when I just have to think about things and it comes back to, I get memories of ASP.NET MVC from 10 years ago and just thinking about how servers work, and any web dev who was raised in the SPA era, they've got a lot of learning to do and it's gonna be ugly at times, especially since React makes it everything look so similar. Sure, the RSCs can have the async keyword and the client components cannot for now, but the differences are so deep-seated and deep-rooted that it's going to be, it's a tough learning challenge and teaching challenge for React, I think. Hello, Ben.
Woo. Sorry.
We're talking about RSC right now. I think you'll get caught up pretty quick.
Oh, yeah.
What I think is funny, Adam, though.
Using it all the time now.
Before we get back to our conversation, we wanted to say thank you to This.Labs, who is the sponsor of today's show. If you need help with a project that has failed to deliver on time or are in need of a team that feels true ownership over your engineering projects, definitely hit up This.Labs. They specialize in helping business leaders ensure their strategic digital initiatives stay on track. Trusted by companies like PlayStation, Capital One, Herman Miller, PayPal, and T-Mobile, you can find them at this.co. That's THISDOT.co. Now, let's return to our show.
With Adam, Adam, I think maybe it's my coping mechanism, but I'm like, I know you're opinionated about things, but I never remember what you're pro and what you're not pro on. I just remember that Adam has strong opinions about like something. So
pro talking.
Well, this is a good segue to the second thing we were looking to talk about. So Rich just gave a beautiful sort of explanation of RSC, and that's actually built into React. It's like a primitive, but you need a framework to come along and actually implement it. And there's any number of design decisions that framework can make. And so the first one that to ever exist for now is Next. And it's kind of the only one. There's this thing called Waku, which is a minor micro framework. But Remix is working on it and TanStack is working on it. But Next was the first one out of the gate. They were the first implementation and they made some, what I think is interesting, and I mean, I'll be honest, a little bit disappointing decisions. Rich, I know this is your employer, so feel free to punt if you want, but do you have any thoughts on how Next implemented RSC as the first one out of the gate?
I don't have opinions based on actually using the app router, but I do have opinions on like framework development generally. And one of the things that I think people don't give the next team enough credit for is that this thing has been around for what, almost 10 years, if not more. And like all of the old stuff still works. And so like this entirely new paradigm has been built alongside an existing very mature framework that is powering millions of applications. And so I think like any critique of the framework needs to be done in the context that like that is a hard thing to do. I do not envy the task one bit. I think it's pretty exciting that this thing exists, right? Because we have people working on the React core team who are also heavily involved in Next development. And so what Next in the App Router essentially is like it is the vision for what using React is supposed to be like. It is as pure a distillation of the concept of React Server Components as I think you'll find. And you know, it's being battle tested with a lot of large production apps today. Some of the, like you mentioned that you've had some frustrations with some of the design decisions. And like, that's what happens if you're the first mover and you're learning in the open. So, you know, I give the team a huge amount of credit for what they've accomplished. And the things that people don't like, they'll get fixed over time. I think it's more interesting to talk about like the very concepts of RSCs, like at a fundamental level, is it the right direction for the web to be going in? And I have like pretty mixed opinions about that whole topic.
What are your opinions?
So, you know, Svelte's thing is let's try and take as much work out of the browser as possible. You know, we were kind of the first framework to popularize this idea that you can do work as part of your build step, and then you don't need to do it like for every user in the browser. And that happens because like at bundle time, we run this compiler over your code and it generates this like optimized JavaScript representation, which is all well and good. But what RSCs are doing is kind of in a similar vein, but in a very different way, doing the work on the server so that it doesn't need to happen in the browser. And that is like a really cool and smart idea if you can get it to work effectively. As I mentioned, the data co-location is also really cool. And a side effect of doing the data fetching on the server is when you inevitably have waterfalls between your components, by which I mean, you know, a child component can't be rendered until some parent component is rendered, and it can't find out what its data dependencies are until that has happened. Like if you're doing that work on the server right next to your database, then the effect of those waterfalls is going to be severely mitigated. So like all of these things point to like a pretty revolutionary architecture.
That's a really key point that I think is not stressed enough. A lot, like any discussion of RSCs you see, people are always freaking out like, oh, it's easy to create waterfalls. But what they leave out is that these are waterfalls on the server, which are very likely to be substantially cheaper than browser to server waterfalls, which is what we had prior to RSC.
Don't go say waterfalls, Tracy.
It's true up to a point. Because you know you might be relying on an external API, which might not be in the same location. Like it might be halfway around the world. And so if you're sort of relying on this heuristic that, oh, I'm doing the work in a server component, therefore I don't need to worry about waterfalls, well, candidly, you might come unstuck. Like a lot of the time that is true, but it's not always going to be true. And so, yeah, it is definitely consideration, but it's not like you don't get a free pass. You're not freed from thinking about that stuff just because you're now using RSCs.
For sure. I didn't mean to imply that you were, but yeah, that's a good clarification.
Yeah.
I feel like at an architectural level, though, React is going to be hindered a little bit by virtual DOM, where like other frameworks like a Svelte or a Angular or a Qt or whatever, they're not like, well, I think the virtual DOM paradigm does make certain like reasoning about certain things easier in a lot of naive senses. Like the problem that I see as someone that worked on some of these things and brainstormed with some pretty smart folks on these things is that when you've got a template for whatever it is, whatever DOM or view you're going to render, you can use a compiler to do things like, you could take a templated framework and literally generate an HTML file that had JavaScript in it. Like, you could do that and be like, I'm just going to put this on a static host and it's done, right? Like, you could actually do that. But with virtual DOM, it becomes a little bit more difficult because you can't always deterministically statically analyze everything that virtual DOM can do, right? Like, so there's some weird problems there because you have this Turing complete templating language and not like a refined set of things that you say, oh, this is all it can do. So it's funny, like, I feel like React success is mostly because of React success at this point. It's great, but like, and it's really easy to Rich's point earlier too, where it's like really easy to shit on frameworks that have been around for a while because they've been keeping backwards compatibility and they can't just pivot. And like, React 1 is stupid. Yeah, well, guess what you used 12 years ago, dude? Like, it was the best back then, right? So it's kind of one of those things where it's really easy to say those things, even for me. I shit on stuff all the time. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, they're phenomenal for what they do for serving so many people for so long. I just think that long term, I worry about any framework that has leaned so hard on the virtual DOM thing as React has, even for like, they have to kind of lean a little bit more into RSCs to get performance than you could maybe get out of just totally client-side rendering things if your compiler could literally just be like, all right, so here's your HTML and here's your JavaScript and, you know, here's a couple backend pieces that you hit or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, for context, Svelte does some of the sort of things that you're talking about. Like in Svelte 5 in particular, you can look at the compiled output in our playground. And you'll see that if you have a static blob of HTML inside your component, that doesn't get turned into any kind of virtual DOM. That just gets turned into a template, which is cloned using like the clone node API. And then it's just there. And on the server, we're just generating HTML. We're just concatenating strings. And so like, it's absolutely true that if you have a templating language and you have a compiler, you can optimize things a lot more aggressively than if you're using virtual DOM. And I don't think we've really fully explored what can be done in that world yet. I think React Compiler is by far the most sophisticated compiler of any front-end framework. But the ceiling on what it's going to be able to achieve, I think, is lower than the ceiling on what template-based frameworks are going to be able to achieve. And it's really on us to make that case. Like, we haven't done enough of it yet. In fact, we were talking about it among the team just today, the opportunities that we have for doing sort of cross-component compilation and understanding how the different parts of your app fit together in a way that allows you to generate super optimal code. And yeah, I agree.
Is that a part of Svelte 5? Is that like, or is this like a Svelte 6?
It's maybe like a 5.x. We don't know at this point. Like, mm-hmm. we're just spitballing. I guess it's a long-winded way of saying that Ben's right. Like, if you are using virtual DOM, then you get a ton of benefits from that. Like, virtual DOM is this actually pretty phenomenal idea that UI is just a value that you can pass around like anything else in JavaScript. Like, that is a deep, profound idea, and is what makes RSCs possible. But it also has some significant real world drawbacks.
Yeah, honestly, like, one of the things that a lot of people are fighting against too, that are working on the template based frameworks, that have kind of kept them behind, is like the backwards compatibility thing, right? Like, I know that Mishko was tremendously frustrated by the things he wanted to do with Angular, but could not do because, you know, he'd break the thousands and thousands of things inside of Google alone. Like, if he was just to be like, oh, okay, we're going to change this. But like, you know, Quick is more like, all right, well, if I have this template and I have this code, I can look at it and I can deterministically say, okay, the HTML looks like this, and these DOM elements are dependent on this state, which is dependent on this state. You get this whole dependency graph of everything, and you can literally publish like here's the HTML file and here's the minimal JavaScript required to see the first thing in the page. And as you scroll in, we can, you know, asynchronously load the other stuff, because you can get a dependency graph of everything, what you're rendering, why you're rendering it, whether it's static, you know, what the data sources are from it, like what, like all of that stuff. And you, that's where that presumability quick stuff comes in. And I don't know that quick is really the answer. I just know that it's the first one I've seen that had the opportunity to try to leverage that as hard as possible, because everybody else that was working in template land is evolving, but has to do, you know, backwards compatibility. And that's a rough thing when you've got millions of users.
It's a rough thing when you've got less than millions of users. Like, we have, the hardest parts of building Svelte 5 has been preserving Svelte for compatibility. If I'm honest, because there is some behavior in there that is like to replicate with an entirely new code base. It's a ground up rewrite where the internal mechanics are very different. Like, it's tough. And I think we've pulled it off. I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised at how easy it is to upgrade, but like, it's not a task that I would wish on anyone.
Yeah.
That was the Angular compiler thing too. It was a ground up rewrite, but you had to have backwards compatibility with the old Angular compiler. And it took years for them to get that done.
So I don't want to let us leave before Rich tells us. So let's say for the folks out there who've used Svelte 4 and love it, why should they be excited about Svelte 5? Like, what are you guys improving?
Everything. Everything about it is better. It's more robust. It's more reliable. It's smaller. It's faster. It's more flexible. It's more composable. It's just easy. Like, you will end up writing less code with Svelte 5 than you did with Svelte 4. And it's just going to feel nicer. It's going to, I don't know. It's got fine-grained universal reactivity. Svelte is no longer restricted to your Svelte components. You can declare reactive state inside .svelte.js and .svelte.ts modules, which is super cool. All of the things that people liked about Svelte 3 and 4 are still there, like all of the motion primitives, like transitions, scoped CSS, super fast server-side rendering. Like, we have an application framework that dovetails really elegantly with the component framework. Like, all of these things continue to be true, but it's just a better version of what I had before. And for the people who looked at the compiler output of Svelte in the past and said, this looks really confusing and wonky, and also if I have a lot of these components, it's going to end up being a larger bundle than if I just used a bigger framework in the first place, that's no longer true, because the compiler output is so much leaner. So on every dimension, it's just better.
Did you ship your opcode RFC, or is this just different optimizations?
No. So we started rebuilding Svelte at the peak of the signals hype. And we're very happy that we did, because it means that the code that the compiler generates is like really easy to read, and we don't need to generate a lot of code at all, because signals give you so much for free. And our implementation of signals is very efficient, it's very memory efficient, it's very performant, because as a compiler, we're able to make design choices that are difficult for other frameworks to make. The thing that you're referring to is sort of an internal design document that we batted around for a little while before we really settled on signals as being the primitive to use for Svelte's reactivity.
If it was not public, I'm sorry if I shouldn't have said that. We can edit it out.
No, it's fine. It was an interesting idea that I think would have not been as successful as signals.
Well, I can't remember actually when, like, how did people take to single? You know, we're talking about how kind of Vercel and or the framework generally, right, next as a framework is kind of like leading the way for RSC or this like new way of thinking, I suppose. And you know, you're saying, Rich, that you have a lot of sympathy for the team, because you know, to innovate, you kind of need to put things out there and, you know, be the first to do it. And, you know, be the first to kind of have a shift in mindset, I suppose, right? In terms of, you know, pushing an industry forward. But signals, did we have those complaints too? Because I feel like I just blinked one day and was like, ooh, signals. And then all of a sudden everything signals. And then like, you know, that I don't remember who, like this slide has been talked about so much where, you know, everybody has signals except for React. Like kind of as a joke, right? that was me. But like with signals and you're like, you know, you kind of did the same thing in my opinion when you started to use that. But like, what was the, I guess like why or how did that kind of come about? Or, you know, why do you feel like that was kind of the way to go? And I mean, that really, I feel like pushed everyone else forward.
Yeah. I mean, so they're not a new idea. They've been around for at least since Knockout was around, which was what, 2008, I think.
Yeah. They called them observables then.
They called them observables. Yeah. And that was the first framework that I saw that had this idea of implicit dependency tracking, where if you run a function and you read an observable inside that function, then there's a link is created between those two things so that when the observable changes, the function executes again. Super nice idea, but like the ergonomics weren't so great, like because Knockout was in a different era. We didn't have the technology that we have at our disposal now. And so even though it had this super elegant implementation, the actual ergonomics weren't quite so nice. And so I think that sort of era in general of, you know, observable backbone models with like PubSub and all of that stuff, people just got a little bit wary of that whole like design space. And then React came along and all of a sudden, like you're just dealing with normal JavaScript values and you're just re-rendering everything to work around the fact that you're just dealing with normal JavaScript values. And people just preferred the ergonomics of that. And so I think the idea of signals took a little bit of a backseat. Vue had this idea when Vue 3 came out, like signals were, they didn't call it that, but signals were part of how Vue 3 came about. And then it was really Ryan Carniato on the Solid team who did the necessary evangelism to say to people, hey, this is actually the way that we should be doing this stuff, and here's why. And did a lot of work to explain all of the details of how you implement this stuff, all of the pitfalls, like the performance characteristics of different approaches. And I think that was the impetus for a lot of framework teams to be like, actually, you know what? Maybe that makes sense. And we were one of the later frameworks to do it because we hadn't yet seen a way that we could use signals but get the ergonomics that we wanted, because we have some opinions about what it should feel like to write components. And it wasn't until, you know, middle of last year that we really started to see a vision for what, like the marriage of Svelte's ergonomics and the flexibility and performance that you get with signals could look like. And now I think we've pretty much figured it out and we're super happy with where we landed, but it just took a long time for these ideas to start to come into focus.
Yeah, it's so funny because perception is everything, right? Like it's like, yeah, Svelte is always at the forefront of everything. So they were one of the first to implement signals. It's kind of, you know, memory, in my opinion, right? Like it's just what you believe, you know?
Yeah, we're actually one of the more conservative frameworks, honestly. We have a reputation for being like this sort of innovative, scrappy thing, but we're definitely one of the slower moving frameworks when it comes to design, not because like we don't have development velocity, but just because we're very picky about what we build. And so it's taken us a long time to get there.
I have this prediction about signals, which are, do you remember when Hooks came out and everybody's really excited? And then like a year later, there's this big backlash for React Hooks where people are like, oh my God, use effect is this horrifying thing. And every single time you see it, you should do what you can to remove it because people are doing bad things with it. This is my prediction. My prediction is in the next couple of years, you're going to see people doing that with computed signals. Like there's going to be all these talks of like, don't do side effects in this thing. Like, here's this pattern that we see all the time. Or like, yeah, you did this computed thing that you could have calculated in the event and it was just adding numbers, but now you're incurring all this extra logic and dependency graph crap because you just wanted to add two numbers together. Like there's going to be, I don't know. That's my prediction is that, because there's such a there's fortunately a very small API space or surface area for people to use. Anything in my experience as the author of ArcGIS, anything where you hand a user the ability to like pass a function, they're going to be like, I can do whatever because it's a function. And if they don't understand things underneath it, which they won't bother to learn, they won't bother to learn about dependency graphs or whether or not it's memoizing things or how it's diffing the changes. Like, they won't bother to learn any of that. They'll just be like, this is a pattern I saw. And I don't know, my prediction is there's going to be not as big as it was with useEffect, but there's going to be a bunch of talks at conferences about like, try not to use computed properties unless you have to.
This is a great opportunity for me to talk about some of the design decisions in Svelte 5, because we've thought about this a lot, as you might imagine. So for context, the way that you declare a piece of reactive state in Svelte 5 is with a thing called a rune. So you know might have a count, which is just a number. You do count equals, and then you call dollar state with your initial value. So count, let count equals dollar state zero. And then you might have a piece of derived state or a computed, depending on the terminology that you prefer. And as you say, like typically the way that you would do that in a signal-based framework is you call a function like create computed or something like that. And then you pass in a function which returns the derived value. And we don't do that. We do, we have a derived rune in which you just pass the expression directly. So if you had, you know, if you wanted to double that count, you do let double equals dollar derived. And then inside the parentheses, you just do count times two. You're not doing open parentheses, arrow, count times two. You're not passing a function in. You're just passing the expression. And the motivation for that, apart from the ergonomics just being a little bit nicer, is that there's no place to do side effects there if it's just an expression. I mean, obviously, you could call a function, which could have those side effects. But if it's just an expression, then you are discouraged from doing that. And the other nice thing that we can do is, because we're not calling a function like create computed, we're actually just giving the compiler the information that, oh, this is a thing that should be recalculated when these things change. The compiler can look at that and in some cases say, you know what, it wouldn't make sense for us to actually create a derived out of this. We can just transplant that expression to wherever it's being used inside this component. And then you're not adding anything to the dependency graph. You're not doing that extra work. You're not creating any extra memory usage. You're just using it as a hint to the compiler for the compiler to do the right thing.
Do you have like a DSL for dealing with lists or nested lists of things in those kind of, in those derived state scenarios? Because I know that's the one of the more difficult things, or one of the reasons I would even lean on a computed property is if I had some big list that I'm like, oh crap, did this change? I have to do some calculations over it and either reduce it down to something or, you know, make a new list. That's been a difficult thing for a long time for people developing things like MobX and, you know, whatever, that do these same sorts of paradigms. If you're not allowing functions in there, I would just be curious how you're gonna handle that, those scenarios.
Yeah, well, we have, so in addition to the dollar derived rune, we have a dollar derived dot by rune, which is the variant where you can pass in a function. But that is sort of positioned as an advanced thing for people who have advanced use cases. The default is you just use an expression.
What do you call it?
So if you go to svelte-5-preview.vercel.app, you can see all of the documentation about the new stuff. There's a page on there detailing the runes. The one that we're talking about is derived. So the way that you use it is dollar derived and then put the expression inside the parentheses. So it looks
the
like
alternate version that takes a function. What do you call that one?
That is dollar derived dot by.
Ah, okay. So it's a helper on the derived.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I feel like the use cases for computed signals are usually like the best use case is probably like, oh, I need to create an object because I'm doing some referential check on it later, and I want to make sure it doesn't change if the inputs to it don't change. Like that's one. And then the other one is the, oh, like I just got a huge list of crap and I need to calculate a bunch of stuff off of it. Or I need to make another list. And those things are if I was reviewing code and someone was like adding two numbers, what are you doing? Stop it. Like, computers are very good at adding numbers. You didn't need to memoize that one.
But I'm pretty sure this is public. I've heard people talk about using classes with Svelte 5, but I love the way that the API wound up for exactly the fine-grained reactivity that you said, Ben. I forget the details, but if you just slam an object literal into these, into whatever rune it is, everything is reactive, but you can get property level fine-grained reactivity by using a class and annotating it somehow. I forget the details, but it's a really elegant like escape hatch where you can do a little more work and get property level fine-grained reactivity like we used to have with MobX.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, we really like classes. I think classes get an unnecessarily bad rap in JavaScript.
It's so dumb.
Yeah, it's weird. There was like, it was fashionable a few years ago for, you know, the thought leader arty to talk about classes as being a thing that you should avoid in your code base, and it's absolute bollocks. Classes are great.
Yeah. That's so funny. Oh, I remember when Jay Phelps, I went over to his house one day, and he was like, here's how you do functional components. And this was like before it was introduced into React. And it was like, you do this and this and this, and this is why it's better. And I was like, why does anybody need classes then? And so it was always my opinion that like classes are awful because, you know, Jay Phelps told me that that was the way.
Classes are fine. They're fine. I do wish there was like a sealed keyword. Because like one of the experiences I had when I was working on the Angular team is like all of their components are class-based. And what people ended up doing, even inside of Google, is they would be like, all right, here's a component that's a class. And by the way, I'm going to subclass this and do some other stuff. And then I'm going to subclass that and do some other stuff.
That's where
you
get in trouble.
And then they have these decorators on properties that like you, the mental math around like writing the compiler to figure out what this thing cared about. Cause now there's a dependency graph between these components that you compile that are from different classes and different files. It was not amazing. It was not my favorite thing in the world. So,
well, but, so I mean, yeah. But like, okay. So Rich, when do we, we're at time. I'm sorry. I cut you off, Ben. But we're at time. So when do we find out more about like when Svelte 5 coming out? What do we?
I'm not going to announce a release date. We're not there yet. We're on the glide path. Like we're starting to work on the documentation and all those sorts of things. But as for a stable release, I can't commit to a date, but you can use it today. Like people are even using it in production. It's on npm svelte at next. And the documentation for the new stuff is on the site that I mentioned before, svelte-5-preview.vercel.app. And people can play around with it and get a feel for it. It works in SvelteKit, our application framework. It's one of the options when you create a new SvelteKit app is to use Svelte 5. So yeah, give it a try.
Cool. Okay, dessert. I decided what dessert's going to be. What is your favorite pairing with cheese?
More cheese.
I'll take that as an answer. What about you, Adam? Do you eat cheese?
I love cheese. Nuts, I think.
Nuts. Okay. Okay. Ben?
I'm still chuckling because Rich with his accent sounded a little bit like Wallace. But yeah. That's pretty good. Wallace and Gromit.
Wallace and Gromit.
I love it too. It's fantastic. And you know what I like to eat with cheese, honestly, is like grapes or apples, usually. So.
Yeah. I like grapes too. Grapes, pretzels, but like the flat pretzels, pretzel crisps. I've been eating a lot of that lately. I've been eating what did you call it, Rich? The common man's cheese cheddar. I'm eating a lot of cheddar.
Yeah.
Gas X. That's a good thing to pair with cheese.
Another one. Ice cream. You could do cheese ice cream. That'd be kind of delicious. Filipino people, they make cheese bread and they put sugar and cheese on top.
That'd be into
of a
that.
Piece of bread. Yeah. So anyways, well, thank you so much for coming and hanging out with us, Rich. We really appreciate it. And you know, you can follow Rich on Twitter at Rich_Harris. And you can follow Ben on Ben. At Ben Lesh. You can follow me on Twitter at Lady Lee, and of course Adam on Twitter at Adam Rackus. So Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.
This podcast is sponsored by This.Labs, a framework-agnostic consultancy that specializes in JavaScript. You can find them at this.co/labs. That's this.co/labs. For all of your friends and you.